Chuck goes in and grabs him. Trouba has him by the neck. Right hand, two right hands from Brady Tkachuk. Trouba gets his right hand. He's throwing one. He lands one on the ear.
Oh.
They both throw one and just miss. Whoa. Tkachuk just misses with a big left. Tkachuk's lost his helmet now, and he is throwing them at Trouba out to center. Brady Tkachuk, Panarin, comes back to catch him. Tkachuk cuts in, scores! Brady Tkachuk buries it, the overtime game winner! 3 seconds to go in the power play. Centering pass deflected away, Shabbat's out.
What a kill.
Tipped away, Carlson centers it in front. Oh, what a save from Forsberg.
Still can't get it out though, Dean.
Puck comes out of the line. Here's a chance. Giroux in all alone. Blinds, fires, scores! He punches that right through the back of the net.
TSN 1200.
Well, there have been a lot of dark days over the last 5.5 years, but I would, and it's a little bit of recency bias, I'm sure, but you'd be hard-pressed to think of, and was it just the two wins on the weekend, but three moments within those two games on the weekend. Tkachuk and Trouba, like, in the ring at center ice on MSG in the second period on Friday night was just theater of its own. Then he follows it up by scoring the overtime winner on a breakaway. And then that sequence with the penalty kill ending with the Giroux breakaway goal on a slap shot on Saturday. Three incredible moments. That, by the way, will be our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question. Which one is the signature moment from the weekend? But two wins, bottom line, and the Sens with four wins in their past five, playing a little better hockey. People feeling a little bit better about the team, and I'm sure the team feeling a little bit better about itself as well as the LA Kings come to town tomorrow night. All right, J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Let's welcome to the discussion our TSN hockey insider, none other than Dave Poulin, a presentation always, as always, of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
I'm doing very well, gentlemen, and you are correct about the moments, but I'm going to add one moment to that, and that's the moment after the game on Saturday night when the family guys in that locker room, the guys that have kids, realize that Sunday is Christmas tree day, and it is going to be a great Christmas tree day because that's the day that you got to go get the tree. Okay, it's next week, you travel on Saturday, you play Monday. The following week, you play Saturday and Sunday. This is going to be Christmas tree day. And early in the month, you know, when I retired, my kids, my oldest two were 9. So it was a big day. It was a big day. And imagine going to get your tree that day, all the guys in the room that have kids, and feeling like you do after those two wins. It's just the best at this time of year.
And how good did it feel, Pooley, just to kind of satisfy the fans? They hadn't been great at home, and Saturday, great energy and entertaining game.
The entertainment factor alone in that game, the ebbs and flows and the guys, the key guys. I mean, this has been a little bit now over the last few games. And I talked, I think it was after the LA game when Brady Tkachuk fought through that Blake Lizotte on that first goal on the faceoff, and just how Brady was elevating his play to a level that, you know, quite frankly, offensively, guys, I don't think a lot of people thought he had this kind of offensive upside. I really don't. And everybody knew he was going to be a good player. Everybody knew he brought an element. But the offensive upside is just remarkable and continues to bring it. And the element that he brings, the Trouba moment on Friday night was special, but so was the entire game on Saturday. And you're getting it from both sides. You talk about Brady, and I'll come right back with Giroux and say, that's the contribution you need. You need everybody to be involved. And that was, you know, as a penalty killer, that penalty killing, that's my vote just on the strength of I'm a penalty killer. And watching that penalty kill and the desperation, because that's the word that is necessary in a penalty kill like that as it progresses. I mean, you talk about selling out. You're selling out every single shot. And you know, in the 4-on-3, and you know that puck is coming and you've got no choice, you've got to be there. But just all the way around, I thought the contribution from top to bottom was as important, because there wasn't a guy, when you're taking your gear off on Saturday night, that didn't feel that they had contributed over the course of that weekend, and that's how it builds.
Can you speak to, in particular, on that penalty kill, since that's what's nearest and dearest to your heart? Travis Hamonic breaks his stick early in the penalty kill. And he's out there for the entirety of the 2 minutes playing without a stick and defending as well. How difficult is it, particularly for a defenseman in that situation, and how exhausting is it to play without a stick for as long as he did?
Well, normally the tendency would be for a forward to give a D that stick, and we talked at length about whether in a 4-on-3 situation or a 5-on-3 situation that the forward should not give up his stick to the D, because the forward has more traversing to do at the top, and that top seam pass, you know, it is a real challenge. And there's no right answer to it. Mm-hmm. It's not given up. He plays without it the whole time. The other thought is if a forward doesn't have it, he may be closer to the bench and he may be able to grab it, you know, in that case, because that's the home bench. But just, you know that that shot is coming. And you know, if I'm a smart penalty killer, I'm not getting anywhere near him where he can grab me or get a hold of me. And so they kind of kept their distance. But boy, oh boy, you're one of those blocking guys that they wheel out in front of the net, those statues that they wheel out in practice so they can shoot around that guy. That's what you are at that point. And that puck is coming, and it's coming off that side as well because the smart team is working against you. It's a helpless feeling. But Travis Hamonic battled the whole way through.
And to have done it after blocking, you know, getting a puck in the throat in the game on Friday, I mean, is that still in your mind or are you going on adrenaline?
No, it's not still in your mind. You're going on adrenaline. And, you know, even that game on Friday night, to battle back the way they did, you know, you look at the two goals it scored against. One is off a throat, the other is off a face. And you're like, you know, in both cases, the puck lands right back on a Ranger stick and it's in the net. And, you know, from a defender standpoint, you're saying, you've got to be kidding me right now. Like, this is ridiculous that this is happening. And then to battle back and get the late goal and then, of course, the overtime winner, it makes all of that stuff, you know, you just that much sweeter.
How good was that power play Saturday, Pooley, against the best-rated penalty kill?
Yeah, I had watched that penalty kill in Montreal earlier in the week, guys, and they were really moving well as a group. They were really tight, and they were moving very, very well. Excuse me. And you know, so you've had the benefit of just watching it. You've just watched tape, and they picked a couple things to exploit, but they were sharp. And just the way they moved the puck, and you can tell when a power play starts, you can tell where the focus is in the first couple passes. If it's tight and it's snapping, you think, okay, we're going to be okay tonight. And if it's a little bit casual and the passes aren't quite as hard and they think they've got a full 2 minutes to score, it's not. But on all cylinders, that was clicking.
Mm-hmm. I know you touched on Tkachuk, particularly on Friday night and his performance. And the fight, I think, my read on it is, and judging by the comments afterward, that was more Jacob Trouba looking for something, and Tkachuk was like, okay, I guess, if you want to. I'm not picking my spots here. Absolutely. What is the theater like? We all talk about MSG, the most self-described, most famous arena in the world, all that, and you're at center ice and everything else. You got the two captains and yada, yada, yada. Like, kind of describe the theater of that moment as you would sort of feel like it if you were a player.
Well, it's different in that building to start with, and it used to annoy me greatly because they weren't even very good at the start of my career up there, and yet you went in there and you thought they were the best team in the world by the way their fans acted. The fans would be strutting in before the game, and you'd be looking at them, but you do know you're in second last place, right? Like you understand that, right? But then they wouldn't even stay long enough to let you enjoy it because they'd leave halfway through the third period, so you didn't even get the last laugh because they were gone. But I don't think there's a building like it with the history. And you're just walking in and all the pictures on the walls and, you know, all the star level of that building. And then you're at center ice and you're Brady. And I think that was Trouba as well, who's, you know, he got involved in the next game that they played as well and was incredibly frustrated through the game. I think he's frustrated with his teammates, guys. And, you know, he's wearing the C and it's not going well there for a team that was picked to do very well. But that's Brady's moment. Brady, if you're going to say, where's Brady going to be? It's going to be center ice at Madison Square Garden. It just is. And the big smile and the relishing it and enjoying it and even taking the fight, that's captain to captain. That's mano a mano. And, you know, and that's an elevator. The danger in Trouba is that, you know, he's beaten up a lot of guys. He's not beating up Brady Tkachuk. I mean, Brady handled himself very, very well.
And after it was over, Tkachuk turned to his bench, and that was a long moment in which he's looking to the bench. Now, I never saw a shot of what his whether he mouthed something, whether he was smiling, whether he was like a come on, but you're on the bench in that moment. What's that like?
Well, I happen to be on the bench in a lot of those moments, JR, because we were involved, you know, and that's a pick-me-up. But that's even different because that's your leader and that's your guy doing it. And I think it's probably more so now because it happens so infrequently. And, you know, we sometimes got to enjoy that three or four times a game, you know, JR, whereas now, you know, you might get that once every 10 games or not even. But even that's a different moment again in a really tight game between two teams that have just played, between two captains on a Friday night in Madison Square Garden. For all those moments, it's bigger.
What's the relevance also that your best player is doing it?
Well, he's doing everything, and that's the pressure. And the best way to lead, you can talk about locker room speeches. You can talk about anything you want. The best way for a captain to be a captain is to play. And if he goes out and plays like that every shift, how do you look at him, you know, walking by him on the way for a coffee before the game or in the training room after the game? And how can you not demand it of yourself? And I think that's the sort of the miss cue on leadership is, you know, what do you say or, you know, team meetings or any of that stuff. And I don't think it's any of that stuff. I think it's playing. And right now, Brady Tkachuk is playing at a very high level.
Four wins in five. Do you feel like the Sens have turned some sort of corner? Or is this just, you know, they're getting some real good play, especially from their top players, and, you know, there's still a wait and see?
No, I think they've turned a corner because of the number of individuals involved and the way things are happening. The timely goals, a last-minute goal, a goal right after a huge penalty kill. Who is scoring those goals? There's a variety of people involved in the offense. And you've got to have your big scoring, but you've got to have everybody involved. And I think the number of people involved is the key element here. You know, it's not just one guy that's carrying this team now. It's different people scoring big goals at different times. The goaltending tandem seems to be filling in a little bit. I like the fact that both guys got wins on the weekend. I think that's encouraging. And, you know, and now in your first little set of games, because we talked about the schedule, it's kind of, you know, there's home and home with the Rangers, and you got a couple home games, and you got a couple road games, and you're back for a couple home games. And all these little sequences, you split the first one, and that was a tough one against the Rangers, and now you go to work. But I think you've turned a little bit of corner. Now you're also looking, and we talked about staying in the moment. You're looking at getting one game closer to 500, and that's the shortest-term goal that's attainable, is to get to 500.
Hopefully the rhythm of the power play and the goaltending pool, he helps in a busy month. Thoughts on Erik Karlsson? First time I saw him live, that he's much better this year. But how would you compare Erik Karlsson, what we see now, to where he was in 2017?
Well, it's much closer than it's been. I'm not sure that you'll ever get to that just because of 5 years of youth and what his tank was at that point and how long he could go. And that playoff run that we saw, I'm not sure if that can be replicated. But he's much closer. And you saw him live, correct, Simmer?
Yeah.
Because that's a much better view of how well he's skating and where he's going on the ice. Because a lot of times he's off camera and he's going to places that it's just really hard to defend. It looked like he was thinking really well. And, you know, and I watched him closely as well. And it's funny, when you're doing color, you got to catch yourself, guys, because sometimes you'll start watching a player and you'll forget what you're doing. Like, you kind of forget that your job is to actually call the game and not just watch one player that you like to watch. And because I like to watch guys off the puck, and I like to watch what's happening and how teams are thinking about where they are. And right now, if he's off the puck, you've got to know where he is. But he's skating as well as he has since that time, Simmer. I'm not sure that time will be replicated.
Mm-hmm. LA Kings are coming to town tomorrow, who the Sens beat just over a week ago. They're goaltending collectively, including Cal Peterson, who's now been sent down to the minors, is the worst in the National Hockey League. But they're not alone. You've got Jacob Markstrom in Calgary. Jack Campbell has lost the number one job in Edmonton. Demko wasn't very good, and now he's hurt. And that's just starting in the West, let alone Shesterkin has been, I can't use the word he used to describe his game with the Rangers overall this season. Why do you think that so many, especially top goalies, are really seemingly struggling this season?
I think it's the offense and the ability of the offense, and we've talked about the lateral pass a lot, and the way that is forcing a goalie to move to a whole different degree. And I know it's very frustrating for coaches because they like to get the pucks on net, and they like to start the play by getting the puck on the net and getting a retrieval. But players right now, guys, if they're given an option, it's a bullet seam pass across the ice, full width to the ice, and then a bullet shot. And I think the pressure that's putting on these goaltenders physically and mentally is really causing a strain on them. I really do. And, you know, each time something happens in the game, then people adjust. And now there's more focus on already I'm watching. There's more focus on taking away the cross ice seam pass and, you know, taking away that flank on the power play that causes you to move absolutely from wall to wall. If you want to get to the flank, you've got to go across the top. And that gives the goalie time to essentially make two moves, one to the top and then one over to the far side. But I just think it's the speed with which that pass is made across that's really, if you watch the goals that go in like that, these goalies are having to work way harder. And I think it's taking a physical toll on them as well.
Do you think Dorion will get a lot of calls on Talbot leading up to the deadline?
Yeah, that'll be a good one. It probably depends on exactly where they are. Because he's, you know, a perfect 1A, 2. I mean, if a team is looking for that, looking for some insurance going in the playoffs. But I think it depends on what Ottawa is and how much they've discussed about the future. And, you know, if this is a tandem they like to roll with for another year or two. And, you know, Cam Talbot's situation, if he were given an opportunity even to stay for another year, he may choose to do that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because it doesn't – well, nobody in the minors is ready right now, Pooley. I'm assuming it would take more than a year. Would you give him a couple of years if he wanted it?
I might look at two, Simmer. You know, I haven't delved into that very hard, but I might look at two. If this continues to go like it does and lets you develop your goaltenders at your pace and gives you a pair up top that are both capable of winning, and Cam Talbot came into it a little bit later, so the mileage from the front end wasn't as high as some guys are. You know, he didn't start his pro career at 19 or 20. And so I might look at that, yes.
Mm. Reports out of Vancouver suggest that Brock Besser, well, through his agent, have been given the option of shopping himself around to see if there's a trade there. What do you think of this? Not necessarily with the Sens, because I don't know that there's a fit there, but what do you think about the state of his game? And you have to combine that, obviously, with the contract that's still got two more years at $6.5 million a year left on it.
Brock Besser needs someone to play with. I mean, I think he's a goal scorer that's more of a finisher than he is a creator. And you know, he hit his peak literally in his first year of his career. But I think you're talking more 20. I don't think you're talking 30 or 40. I just don't. It looked like when he started that this was going to be an electric 40-goal scorer. But whether he's not getting to the same places he did or whether he's not getting the same deliveries that he was at that point, you know, I think you're a low mid-20s goal scorer is what he is that, you know, does his damage when he's receiving a pass more than he does creating it for himself. So that's a pretty high price tag with a handful of years left. And the surprising thing is when you go to an agent like that, and apparently, you know, I mean, you don't know what you're hearing, but you're hearing that the coach wasn't aware of it, or he at least said he wasn't aware of it. It's a little bit unusual to go to an agent like that this early in the process, if it in fact is this early in the process, because Nathan will, you know, will demand a trade. And, you know, we've been in a situation where you look and go, okay, you know, what exactly are you demanding? Because what you think of your client and what he's capable of getting back, we're not giving him away. And you keep telling us that there's people that want him and you tell us where we're going with it. And that seems a little unusual with a player that's only 25 years old and is, you know, he's produced at a good level, the National Hockey League, but that seems a little unusual to me.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're trying to humble him, Pooley. I said the same thing. I think it is Ben Hanginson. In this case as well, do you look at this player for both, maybe physically, but obviously personally with the loss of his father, that some clubs might look in a one-for-one, that this is a guy that just needs a fresh start?
Yeah, it could very well be. It could be. And, you know, he just burst onto the scene with such a loud bang 5 or 6 years ago, and it simply hasn't followed up with him. So with everything that has happened, you know, to him, and then you can't, you know, with the issues that you just talked about, Simmer, you can't disqualify that a lot of those happened during the pandemic as well. And while the pandemic affected everyone. It affected some who dealt with personal issues a lot more.
All right, good stuff. On that note, we'll let you go. Appreciate the time. As always, what's your TV schedule this week?
I've got the Sens tomorrow night.
Okay.
I've got all studio this week, so it's a good one.
All right, sounds good. Appreciate the time as always. We'll chat again on Wednesday.
This is TSN 1200.
All right, welcome back. 8:45. Duke Ellington will join us next hour. We'll talk about, a couple of things. The Red Blacks' big weekend, Friday is the weekend, yeah. The announcement of Bob Dice becoming the full-time head coach of the team, and then Saturday adding the news of Kahari Jones, former head coach in Montreal, longtime offensive coordinator, former longtime player in the CFL, will be the new offensive coordinator with the Red Blacks. Talk to Duke about that. And about the NFL day that was, including a couple of significant quarterback injuries. Jimmy Garoppolo done for the year, broken foot, and Lamar Jackson out for days or weeks, but not season ending. That's from John Harbaugh, the Ravens coach, but Lamar Jackson out for the short term, at least for the Ravens. Both of those teams, of course, in playoff positions right now. Duke Ellington will join us next hour. All right, our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. What was the best moment from the Sens' two wins this weekend? We focused on the show this morning about three different aspects of those two victories. There was the Brady Tkachuk, Jacob Trouba fight at center ice of MSG on Friday night. There was Brady Tkachuk's overtime winner in the same game on Friday night. And there was, from Saturday's game, the 4-on-3 penalty kill in which Hamonic didn't have a stick for most of it. All of them running on fumes, and then as the penalty comes to an end, Claude Giroux gets sprung on a breakaway, scores, and he does it on a slap shot in front of a wired-up crowd. What was the best moment from the Sens' two wins this weekend? Simmer, I put the question to you, and what say you, my friend?
I'll go with Giroux. I liked the nights on Friday. Now, I wish this was more like an Aguinla Le Cavalier, where it was less than true, but not to take away from it. He's a big, tough guy, and it's two captains. The goal was big, but I was live on Saturday, and it was a really fun energy, JR, right from the anthem. Everybody singing to Brady Tkachuk's first goal, and in the building, I can't remember the last time, it was probably Craig Anderson, where the goalie got a standing O. That was basically the people rising and cheering, and all of a sudden the puck is on Drew's stick, and it's just like a playoff game. Everybody starts to rise, and when he just turned and just slapped that bad boy into the net the way he did, oh, it was just incredible energy. So I'm going with the Claude Giroux play.
I can't get over the fact that when Giroux was asked why he went with the clapper, mm-hmm. He said, because I was talking to Pinto in the intermission, and he told him he was going to, score on a slap shot or... Score on a slap shot.
Because he wouldn't normally say, if I get a breakaway, I'm going to score on a slap shot.
And then sort of have the presence of mind, I guess it is, to have a scoring opportunity and to think as he's skating down the ice alone going, I told Pinto I was going to, when I had a chance, I was going to score on a slap shot. So I guess that's what I got to do in this situation and then ultimately doing it. And that's wild to me.
Well, and again, it's a little bit like earlier in the year, Brady Tkachuk trying to shoot between his legs. You don't score. If that thing whistles wide and it hooks around, they come back up the ice and it's a one-goal game, JR, and it's not. But if it was a 3-2 game, he gets scored on, people would be like, what the hell were you doing?
But it was a 4-2 game.
No, exactly.
Got a little gravy there.
No, that's my point, is that you feel a little different. But the fact that, and it was almost like as a goaltender, you don't expect these things. And you're trying to gauge, okay, is he going to shoot when he gets in tight or is he going to do? But it was almost like the goaltender's like, well, I have no chance on this. And he just wired the thing. And he also scored a beautiful goal earlier in the game, the second period, top shelf. So, like I said, it was just, and I'm sure Hammer being there, it was a really cool energy, JR, and it was just really satisfying. Everybody, started heading out at that point, or that people that did, obviously there was a lot of energy.
And as opposed to them booing the Sens off the ice, which they had done the last couple of home games, hadn't been good.
Nope.
And you know what? If you feel like booing, then you should boo. Hammer, you're at all the games. That was the best atmosphere, the player said, since the Boston home opener. You would agree?
I think we all said that during a commercial break, Gord, Dean, and myself, saying that this has been the best game since the home opener, which is kind of too bad because the team has had some decent crowds and they just really haven't matched it with the play on the ice. But it was phenomenal. And then that sequence of the 2 minutes of the PK leading to the Giroux goal, I mean, it's hard for me to think about the last big moment on Sens home ice. Since that was just that whole sequence was amazing, and that the fans were getting into it, and they were cheering every save, every block, Hamonic losing his stick, and it was a pretty cool moment, and it's hard to remember what the last time there was that much energy in the building for something like that, other than the home opener, the 7-5 win. But my vote is actually going to go to the Brady Tkachuk OT winner in Madison Square Garden. I'm also going to add the tip as well. I'm going to add the tip, the tying goal as well. I mean, that was – well, I not, know it's not there.
You're not allowed.
But I'm going to include the sequence of the deflection tying goal and the OT winner because that just brought the energy Saturday night with a great home crowd. I really think that was the building blocks right there.
That's interesting that you say that. Would the atmosphere have been the same – to start the game on Saturday, which you guys were both at the game, and you would agree the energy level was high right from the drop of the puck on Saturday. Now, like San Jose, it's Erik Karlsson, so there is, but San Jose's, they're not
they're
that interesting.
They were playing the highlights of last night's game, too, so they were getting the crowd kind of primed. But, they were getting it ready, as you should do.
But my point being that San Jose, other than Erik Karlsson, isn't necessarily, you know, you're not getting jacked up for a Sharks game normally. Other than the Karlsson factor, and that's been kind of been there, done that a little bit. He's been back here in Ottawa a few times. My point being, if Friday's game is just a loss, does the game start that way, and therefore, if the energy level doesn't start to begin, is it somewhat muted for the entire game?
I don't know if it's muted, JR, but it wouldn't start the same. There was no doubt everybody was buzzing about Brady Tkachuk, the chat that we had. And then to start the game, as I said, when he got announced was, absolutely, it was elevated. And now you also had a real good crowd. It helps. But then when he scored, like I said, that felt like a playoff moment as well. So absolutely it helped. And I guess kind of what Hammer's also saying, it feels like now they need to win every game. But there's no doubt, had you lost Wednesday and Friday to the Rangers, I don't think even the team feels as good coming in, right? Now all of a sudden you look at it and say, wow, you won 4-5, and the one that you lost was the one you expect to lose when you come off of the left coast road trip. So, I think it really, like a lot of people were buzzing on social media about Brady heading into Saturday night because of that.
Now, I was not at the game Saturday, so I you know, and what? So you voted for the, you voted for the moments, okay? Mm-hmm. So I'll make it a, clean 3-for-3 that we all oppose each other, because I'll go with the fight on Friday night. Now, it's not that the Sens... the rest of the team got a big push after the fight, despite the fact that, first of all, it was a crazy circumstance. And then you had Tkachuk looking at the bench kind of with a follow me boys kind of a thing. Because after that, quite frankly, the New York Rangers carried the play for the rest of the period and for some of the third as well. So there wasn't that immediate kind of an entire team lift from the Tkachuk fight. But I think Brady Tkachuk himself, maybe he inspired himself a little bit more, because the rest of the game with the final minute game tying goal and then the winner in overtime speaks for itself. But just in terms of theater, and I may agree with you, Simmer, on the Giroux play from Saturday, but just in terms of me watching at home on my TV, that was incredible to watch on to see two captains. And Jacob Trouba is a good player. He's a really good player, and he's the captain of one of the most famous teams in the National Hockey League, and it's at center ice in Madison Square Garden and all that other stuff. Like, that moment as soon as it started and I realized it was Trouba, that moment for me wasn't lost. Like, this is one of those ones that you don't see very often happen. And I don't know that there's anybody else on the New York Rangers where I would have gotten, I can't even think of another player on the New York, first of all, that even fights in that situation. So Trouba is probably the right, two American cat, whatever. All add it all together, and for me, I thought that kind of kicked off what was just a really, really interesting weekend for the team as a whole.
Yeah, and even look at the big picture Rangers, JR. First of all, you lose one that hurts you like that. How do you think they felt going in and losing to Chicago 5-2? Chicago's bad. There's nice, teams are struggling like Ottawa. You don't look in Ottawa and say that's a bad team. Chicago's bad. So getting a little bit lower as well. And they are monumental moments. And as I said, for any hockey player, but I do think for American kids, and whether it be Brady Tkachuk or Sanderson and Stutzla's a germ, but it is something really special. Would have watched Dad play there a bunch of times. And also, and I'm sure Chris Drury was trying to kidnap Brady Tkachuk after the fact, in what was really the mandate for Drury when he came in, JR, has really, after last year, and they did a few things, including picking up Kopp, They have not only, you know, gone a little bit, or they're
Tom Wilson, it started when Tom Wilson had his way with them, right?
Exactly.
And then they got Reeves and...
Well, but that's basically, you know, John Davidson and Gorton got fired because I remember Dolan saying we're too soft. And to that is when you look at that Ranger hockey team right now, not only are they lacking in some depth because of Kako and Lafreniere not stepping up, they're not a very hard team to play against. Like, Kreider's never been a true power forward in a sense of, other than running into the goaltender and going to the net, you know what I mean? Then you get Zibanejad, Panarin, kind of go down the list there, and you just imagine that knowing Brady Tkachuk, knowing the dad, they're all BU alumni, there wouldn't be a hockey scout on the planet watching that game and just saying, my God, would I love to build my team around Brady Tkachuk. That's one of those moments as well. That wasn't something new for the world, but it certainly just made, that would be a conversation in the press box with the scouts of, oh my God, I wish that guy was on my team.
Would they say it in that voice too?
Well, Mark Bergevin would.
Cry?
Maybe the Montreal Canadiens, because we now the next one will be, if I don't know how, if he could take Kotkaniemi down, but if he did, imagine what you'd do with
if
him.
If Kotkaniemi was still in Montreal, now you got to take down Dvorak.
Yeah,
that doesn't quite have the same. No, doesn't quite have the same.
And Kotkaniemi, I think he could do that with one hand, probably just with your glove on.
By the way, the results of the poll. The PK Giroux goal, 55%. So it's running away with it. 34% Tkachuk overtime winner, and just 11% say the Tkachuk fight. So let us know what you think at tsn1200.ca, the Sens' biggest moment from the two wins on the weekend.
And again, you always use that term recency bias. One of the things, so many people had that screen grab yesterday of Giroux shooting from the slot here, and people were just, and in watching the highlight. And like I said, we did the audio highlight, which is a good call. But it also, the video, and I don't even think it would show it, but if you're in the building, JR, was a cool part. There was this swell where, like, I had to get to the railing to see over the people that all of a sudden, as he grabbed the puck, everybody just got on their feet and the energy just went wet up. And then, like I said, by the time it hit the back of the net, it was bonkers. It was like a playoff game.
Well, and not to brag about how much more we know about hockey than some other markets, but I think, you know, this People realize kind of what are important moments in games, and you know we all tend to talk about goals, right? Big goals and big moments or whatever. But things like penalty kills, you know, late in games when you're protecting one and two goal leads, those can be as crucial. And I think people really, you know, people know, right? They appreciate the fact that that was three guys in Mott, Sanderson, and Hamonic in particular with no stick, you know, doing it for as long as they did. And Forsberg, obviously, a huge part of it as well. But realizing the importance of the moment. I think that's not lost on a lot of people who just understand the game intuitively, right?
Yeah, I agree. And I think for a lot of people tracking, I'm now 4-0 in working Sens games on Saturday night.
Wow.
And I know
had four Saturday night home games?
They've had a couple
afternoon games,
yeah, let's
too,
go
right?
with it anyway. Yeah. And I think you're 0-1, so, you know, I don't know.
Well, that was a Wednesday game. I'm 0-1 in attendance this year.
That was that Ranger game.
Yeah, it was a bad game. That was not good. Some of the responses to the poll... Derek writes, regardless of the poll results, Tkachuk's fight got the whole thing started for me this weekend. Primetime Bill writes, the Giroux breakaway clap bomb. The Sens vibe says the OT win has to take the cake, not even close. We scored our first with the goalie pulled in the last minute of play, only to score and win with 14 seconds left in overtime. Matthew writes, I mean, Brady's game was out of this world, but killing a... He says 5-on-2.5, but it was actually a 4-on-2. Well, regardless. And then scoring on a slapper in a full barn with the best fans in the league, losing their minds. It's just amazing. That comes from Matt.
And I know Ottawa has lost a lot of one-goal games, but people sometimes throw this stat out, JR, like every time people pull their goalie, they score. I don't know what the numbers are, but I don't personally ever expect anybody to score with the man advantage. And it always feels like it's at the last dying seconds, you know what I mean? Like, not like the percentages. It's just that, unfortunately, Ottawa had a lot of one-goal losses or two-goal in the case of empty net here to start the season.
All right, so that was all the good news, the good vibes from the weekend. Darren Dreger has tweeted out this morning within the last few minutes that the news on Artem Zub, according to what he's hearing, is not as good. And that he writes, still more medical evaluations to come, but looks like Zub could be out 2 to 3 weeks after taking that puck in the face on Friday night when New York ended up scoring their second goal of the game. I could tell by the way that when DJ Smith answered the question on Saturday afternoon in his media availability, when he said, look, Zub's not going to play, and there was a follow-up question, and you could just
tell. They said, will he be back Tuesday?
Yeah.
And he was like, well.
We'll tell you more on Monday. When they're already on Saturday telling you on Monday, that's kind of like, that was a, I sort of tweaked onto the fact that this is probably not going to be a good news scenario. So, again, Darren Dreger hearing that it could be 2 to 3 weeks on Zub. This is already as well documented and well talked about, a very thin blue line that could ill afford losing one of its top three defensemen. I think it's more than fair to say. So that's from the not so good news front this morning.
No, and also in hearing that, waiting for the swelling to go down, JR always tells me that there's been a bit of a crack, and then obviously once the swelling goes down, the crack opens a bit more, and you get a hairline fracture, whatever you end up getting. So that hurts. Now I will say, as a positive to the couple of nights, Zaitsev came in and I watched him live Saturday. JR was better. And that's after being booed a little bit to open the game. He played to me. He simplified a little bit and he was actually trying to make plays and passes. And I don't think that can, and I said to Creature on the pregame show, like, don't kid yourself that for a player like Zaitsev, it's a lot easier to play on the road right now. And to come home and play now with Zub out, we'll see where things go. But I think that should be indicated. And I thought it was pretty cool that they gave him player of the game when there was about 15 guys that probably could have it ahead of him. But recognizing that that's not easy, man, when an athlete's having a tough time with his home crowd.
Mm. Didn't have it on the, was he booed loudly?
No.
He was introduced as one of the starters?
Yeah, he was. It wasn't loud, but what was going on because of the night before is that Brady got the type of thing that you get when you return to Ottawa.
Mm.
I mean, Carlson even got a nice little ovation. It was just that it was so quiet and a few people did boo. It was nothing crazy, but as I said, you just recognize that this has been talked about more than I would even expect, of the fact that he's had a tough time with this. So I think that should be recognized, that he came in and played hard and played well.
I haven't heard the DJ chants in that, but you could hear, from my perspective, you could hear the boos when Zaitsev was announced. And
right.
It's kind of unfortunate. You know, you're coming in looking forward to this game, and then for a player to get booed, you're kind of hoping that, all right, bygones be, but let's just move on from this right now. And
yeah.
Focus on this game.
And I do agree with you, Simmer. I think, you know, most people's, pretty much every fan's mind is already made up on Zaitsev, to the fact that they can't help but see nothing but bad things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I try to look at everything in a vacuum. And listen, on Zaitsev, it's a game-by-game basis. And for the most part, the games have not been very good. But I think you have to be honest with yourself. And watching him play, I thought both on Friday night when he was on the third pairing role and then elevated on Saturday night, I'm not saying he wasn't even not terrible. I thought he was fine.
Yeah.
He was fine, which is if that's what you're getting from Nikita Zaitsev at this stage, I think you're more than happy with he was fine.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also just, you know, again,
that's high praise.
But it feels like Shabbat's found his game as well, JR. So now all of a sudden you wouldn't have a blame game of, well, he struggled because of that. No, it's, you hop in. And as I said, it wasn't bad, but what a lot of people chose to be was silent. So when you have silence for the introduction, anybody that's yelling anything, you're going to end up picking it up. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like Eric Carlson probably got the second or third, you know, biggest cheer after Brady Tkachuk.
All right. Sens get the Kings tomorrow night, and then they head out on the road for a pair of games in Dallas against the Stars, who are playing some great hockey this year, and Jason Robertson. That's a game on Thursday night, and then they're in Nashville for a game on Saturday afternoon. That's the week ahead for the Sens, who return to practice ice later on this morning. All right, we'll take a break and get a top of the hour news and sports update. Then when we return, Duke Ellingson joins us. We'll turn our attention to football, both the news from the Red Blacks, with Bob Dice now the full-time head coach, and Kahari Jones the offensive coordinator. So we'll go through that with Duke and talk about the NFL day that was, including a season-ending injury for Jimmy G, and Lamar Jackson is hurt, and the Eagles are 11-1, and the Bills are back on top in the AFC, and the Bengals have the Chiefs' number. Lots of NFL stuff to go over with Duke Ellingson. We'll get that for you. Don't forget, 10 o'clock, we got the first of two World Cup games for you. We're into the knockout stages now. Round of 16, Japan-Croatia kicks it off at 10. This afternoon at 2, it's Brazil and South Korea. All straight ahead on this Monday morning. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200.